because it's
Blog Talk Radio.
This is September 5th, 2011. My name is Tom Rydell, and my co-host here is Lou Rydell, my wife. And on today's show, you're going to have an opportunity to meet one very charming individual from Canada. His name is Claude Bouchard. And if I didn't pronounce that name right, it may either be Claude or Claude.
Claude.
Claude. Okay, we'll say it that way then. Anyway, let's do a little housekeeping as we usually do at the beginning of the program. You can find us over at the Writer's Lounge blog at tomrydell.com/blog. That's where we do the written reviews of books and other material you might be interested in. If you are in the Blog Talk Radio site and would like to go down to the chat room, the links are there for today's show, and that would be one of the links you can click on and go over and have a look at. Also, of course, as everybody else is, we are on Facebook. The link for that is there. I'm not going to bother reading off the link address because it's rather long, but you can also look us up on Facebook, and you should be able to find us once again under the Writer's Lounge. And also, of course, we have an email contact, and that would be twl11@yahoo.com. And we hope that if you have any questions or any concerns, or if at some point you would like to be on the program, go ahead and give us an email and we'll see if we can put you in one of our slots that will be coming up. I'll explain that shortly, which is basically right about now. Our upcoming guest list and authors coming up here, September 19th, we're going to have Sherry Gambino. October 3rd, we'll have Maggie Shane. October 17th, Luke Romain. October 31st, which is Halloween, we will have co-authors DJ Weaver and CK Webb on. And on November 14th, Brandon Ford will be on. Now, there's time slots opening up after November 14th through January. And once again, if you'd like to be a writer, if you'd like to be a guest on the program, give us an email at twl11@yahoo.com, and we'll see if we can get you into one of those slots. My wife here will be working on that shortly, and hopefully we'll have a lineup that you'll enjoy. Okay, where are we at, Lou? Let's see here. I think what I have to do here is I have to do a review, or actually not a review, but a promotion for Webweaver. And, of course, I just mentioned that CK and DJ are coming on here on Halloween, but I'm also a guest, or I guess now I'm an all-time or full-time reviewer over at their site at Webweaver. And if you'd like to go over there, you can. Let me see if I get the address down here. It's kind of a long one. I'm not even going to go with the W's. Everybody knows what that is, but it's Webweaver. That's Webweaver. / Zelda.555.com. blogspot.com. And once again, if you're on the Blog Talk Radio site, that is down in the chat room for you to click on. Have a look at that too, if you would. There's some good stuff over there. They've got some exciting news coming up. And they also, like the Writer's Lounge, they also review new and they also interview better known authors. So take a look at them over there. I'm sure you're going to enjoy it. And of course, tell them that TWL sent you. Okay, I think we got everything cleaned up. And this is my wife coming on now. And we just got back from a very nice vacation up north at the lake. And we're a little bit exhausted from that. The cool air, I think, does it to us. So how are you enjoying the weekend? Long weekend.
I'm exhausted.
You're exhausted. Okay, like we all are.
Too much fresh air.
Too much fresh air and good food. And we had certainly a lot of that today.
And good company.
And very good company. Okay, where are we? Let's see. What do we want to do next, Lou? I'm going to talk about our topics, which we call writer's topics. And Lou's got some topics here that I think were all interested in as being writers, especially writers who are beginning. And what do you got for us today, Lou?
Looked at something on the internet and I found an article about writing craft and technique, the building blocks of creative writing. It's quite a long article and I'd like to touch on this some more in future programs, but I've got a few little things here that I'd like to mention that might be of use to new writers. I certainly found quite a lot of interesting things here. One of the things they talked about is why conflict matters. You know, a book can be kind of boring if you're writing a fiction novel and you have no conflict. The article says that conflict is the basis of plot. Without it, there's no story to tell because there would be no change or growth. And I think we can all agree with that.
I also think that sometimes there's conflict in the story, but it doesn't hit you as much as it should, or it hits you too much. So there is a balance there, I think, that you have to decide where to throw in that conflict and when to present it and when to back off from it.
Yeah, I agree. You know, unless you're writing a really rollicking adventure novel, you know, in which case a lot of conflict is fine, a war novel, something like that. But I agree, you know, balance in everything. The next tip that they gave was writing dialogue. And one of the things that they mentioned that was really important is listen to how people talk. And I think a lot of us, as writers, we spend a lot of time people watching, but I don't know that we really spend a lot of time people listening.
Like maybe go to McDonald's or Burger King and sit there for about an hour and, you know, just kind of nurse your fries and that hamburger and listen to what some of the characters are saying. And I call them characters because you can use them in your next story. In fact, won't go into detail, but we had some characters next to us in a cabin up at the lake, and they certainly were characters that you could actually inject into a very interesting story. Wouldn't you agree?
Oh, absolutely. They were pretty interesting people, let's put it that way. You know, one of the other things that they talk about is not providing too much information at once. You don't want to give everything away in one go. Tease your reader a little bit. I think that's important. Keep them drawn into the story. Keep them there. Keep them engaged. Don't try to do everything at once because, you know, if you do that, they're going to get bored afterwards.
Exactly.
The other thing that they mentioned was point of view. Make sure that you keep your writing in the same point of view. If you start writing in the first person, don't switch to the third person halfway and vice versa. Decide, you know, which is the best style for you to use to write, which is your best point of view, the easiest one that you find to write in, and stick to that.
I was wondering, with you and your writing, how do you decide in the beginning what point of view to use? What's the criteria for using first person or the other two that you mentioned?
I think it depends on the story. My first two novels are written in the third person. My third novel is written in the first person. It just, whatever lends itself best to the story, I guess, is, you know, is what you choose. Some people choose to write exclusively in one or the other, and some people, you know, switch over depending on the actual story.
Right.
And then they talk about creating believable characters. One piece of advice that somebody gave me once about my novel, my first novel, was to make the reader fall in love with my character. And I think you can look at it as having somebody fall in love with your character or fall in hate with your character.
You need to do both.
Well, I think depending on the character, if you've got somebody who is an absolute, just a terrible person, he's a murderer, he's whatever, you want that emotion to be engendered in your reader. You want your reader to feel passionately about, you know, what kind of a person your protagonist or antagonist is. So I think that's important. You've really got to engage them in a sense that they do pick up on your character and even the flaws. Make sure that they, as you're writing, that they know what your character is feeling, what your character is thinking. I think that's very, very important.
Right. Yes, and then, you know, kind of piggybacking on to the writing style and everything you mentioned, there's a book written by Natalie Goldberg. It's very good. It's called Writing Down to Bones. The next time you're over in a bookstore at Barnes & Noble, take a look for it. It's a very good read if you're starting out and you want to learn more about it. And what I found interesting, and I have a challenge here, and I know my wife would agree, that I can't seem to disconnect myself from my words and what I write as opposed to what I'm reading from another author. What I mean by that is I can't read what I've written outside of myself. I have no judgment of how good my writing may or may not be, and that is really difficult to get through, and I think it stops a lot of writers from going forward. And Natalie writes in here under Claim Your Writing. That's the heading, Claim Your Writing. She says, time and time again, I have experienced a particular phenomenon in writing groups. Someone will write something extraordinary and then have no idea about its quality. It doesn't matter how much I may rave about it or the other people in the group give positive feedback, the writer cannot connect with the fact that it is good writing. He doesn't deny it. He just sits there bewildered, and later, through the grapevine, I hear they never believed a word of what was said. So that's what I'm battling with. I have a hard time trying to separate, or not separate, but to claim my writing as mine and to, you know, to see both the good and the bad. There's parts that I'll read and I'll think, wow, that's really good. And of course, there's other parts that I read and I'll say, man, I don't know why I'm doing this because I really suck at it. Can you relate to that, Lou?
I think all of us have our little insecurities. You know, we have our moments where we do exactly that. We'll write something that just takes us by surprise, and at other times become really disillusioned with what we're writing because it does seem like something that nobody would really be interested in reading. So we're all our own worst critics at the end of the day. And I think we have to remember that. And that's why it's really important to have somebody else work, you know, read your work and give you feedback.
And also, don't stop. Just keep going. A lot of people out there say write every day. Just keep writing and writing and writing. And there's others of us, like myself, who don't write every day, but we have a clear path or goal in mind for our writing project. And whenever we can write, we sit down and write. I'll spend maybe 2 or 3 or 4 hours at a time, and then I'll take maybe 3 or 4 days off, and then I'll get right back to it again so I can kind of work on that as it's coming through. Okay, now what I'd like to do is get into the part of the show that we're all here for, and I would like to open up the interview with Claude Bouchard. Once again, is that Claude? Or Claude. It's Claude.
Claude Bouchard.
Claude Bouchard. And he lives in Canada, actually Montreal. And the book Asylum, written by Claude Bouchard, examines the boundaries between our professional and personal lives, and it forces us to decide which is more important. As managing director of the Montreal Hospital for the Criminally Insane, Dr. Matthew Russell has always put his professional responsibilities ahead of all else. That is, until one day he realizes he is losing his wife, Cassidy, and his two children, Stuart and Jennifer. With only his family in mind, Russell takes an adventure-filled impromptu vacation of indefinite duration, leaving all else behind and stopping at nothing to show how much he cares for his loved ones in an effort to win them back. But will he succeed, or will it prove to be all too late in the end? As I read Asylum, I was a bit disappointed that the author took me out of the comfortable and interesting confines of a mental institution and opted to take me on a vacation. So anyway, I just like Dr. Russell, would have been very happy to just stay behind and deal with the insanity and meet all of the interesting personalities which populate such places, and I do know about that. But the author has something else in mind when he sat down to weave this tale, and I have to say, even though I was a bit let down at being freed from the loony bin, the vacation was very nice, and after finishing the last page of the book, I was happily left with a maniacal smile on my face. Thank you, Claude, for that. Now, Lou will read an excerpt from Asylum, and then we'll meet the author, Claude Bouchard.
The afternoon raced by as the Russell clan took on the water park by storm. They floated gently in inner tubes through natural foliage along the lazy river, a pleasant ride which changes formation every 20 minutes and emulates the feeling of being carried by the tide with the use of pneumatic jets. At Stuart's insistence, they then moved on to the Tornado, a giant waterslide some 7 stories high and 200 feet long, which is navigated aboard a 4-passenger cloverleaf-shaped float. A moment of concern arose as they noted that the minimum height requirement was 48 inches, of which Jennifer was 4 shy. However, as their turn came, the attendant gave her a brief stern look followed by a wink and a smile. "Make sure that you hold on tight and that your mom and dad keep an eye on you, okay?" he told the 7-year-old. "I will, I promise," Jennifer replied solemnly. "So do we," Cassidy assured the young man. "Thank you. You won't get in trouble for this, will you?" "No problem, ma'am. I was just teasing your cutie here," the man laughed. "Minimum height is 40 inches if accompanied by at least 2 people over 4 feet tall, so there's no problem." Jennifer was similarly permitted to ride the Sirocco on another 4-person cloverleaf float, as well as the Wild River, where she partnered with her father on the dual passenger tube, while Stu teamed up with Cassidy. The men then went off to take on some more of the extreme slides, such as Diablo and Rafales, while the ladies headed for tamer fun at the castle and Pirate Island. The afternoon ended with an hour of wave bashing at the Big Blue, the park's state-of-the-art wave pool. "Well, that certainly was a boring afternoon," Matt commented with a blasé expression as they pulled out of the parking lot at around 6 o'clock. "Tell me about it," Cassidy replied, feigning a yawn. "No way," argued Jennifer in disbelief. "Our parents are nuts," Stuart stated, shaking his head. "Oh, you had fun?" Matthew asked as he watched them in the rearview mirror. "Are you kidding?" cried Stu. "We had a blast, a super blast," Jennifer pitched in. "I see," replied their father as he turned to Cassidy. "Our plan didn't work. It seems like we are going to have to bring them with us again next time." "Darn," she said as she looked back and winked at the kids. "Yeah, darn," muttered Matthew. "It's just one problem after another with those two." "Oh, yeah? What other problem do you have with us, family man?" Stuart asked from the back. "My current problem is this," Matt grinned. "Do I take you guys to Boston Pizza or Baton Rouge for dinner?" "Ribs," Stu replied without hesitation as his mother and sister nodded. "Problem solved." "Baton Rouge it is," Matthew laughed in agreement.
Very good. And Claude Bouchard was born in Montreal, Canada, where he still resides with his wife, Joanne, and their two cats, and I hope I pronounced the names right, Cristalli, I believe, and Midnight. He completed his studies in human resources, accounting, and management at McGill University and worked in the HR and finance fields for what he says was too many years. He He first sat down to write in 1995 and completed his first novel, Vigilante. Next came The Consultant in 1996, Mind Games in 1997. The Homeless Killer was published in 2009, and 6 Hours 42 Minutes was introduced to us in 2011, all part of the Barry McCall series born from Vigilante. Asylum, of course, was also published in 2011, which is not in the Barry McCall series, and he is currently working on Discreet Activities, number 6 in the Barry McCall crime thriller series. When Claude isn't writing or editing his work, he says he spends his time making noise with his guitars, painting in oil and watercolor, reading, traveling, and planning to work out. Lou and I are now pleased and excited to welcome our friend and author, Claude Bouchard, to the Writer's Lounge. And good evening, sir. How are you today?
I'm fine. Good evening, Tom. Good evening, Lou. And it's a pleasure to be on your second show.
Hey, how are you doing?
We're doing good. Okay.
And it's good to talk to you.
And yes, Claude, you are charming.
Well, thank you, and I'm blushing.
Okay, I guess we'll start off with the questions here. I guess what I'd need to ask you first is, how long have you been a writer, and what and who inspired you to be a writer?
I started writing, as you mentioned, in the bio. I first wrote Vigilante in 1995. I don't know exactly what inspired me to write. I just had an idea come on. I read a lot and was aware of current events, so on and so forth, and just an idea that was born in my head. And as I thought about it and the story was kind of coming together, I just had to get it out. And one night I sat down at the computer and started typing, and 2 months later, using up all my free time to write, Vigilante was born and finished.
Cool. Did you listen to the first half of the program when we were talking about the nuts and bolts of writing and the challenges that we have?
Yeah, I was logged on and listening as of 8 o'clock.
And I was wondering, did you experience any of that?
My writing has always been, I've never taken taken any classes in creative writing or whatsoever. I just kind of sit down lots of times with a very general idea, and just start typing. And frankly, you can say that I don't really know where it comes from. Characters appear as they're needed. Mm-hmm. Lots of times, barely to my knowledge, and it just flows out.
You do drugs to bring those characters forward?
No.
Seeing as this is a public program, I'm not going to answer that.
Okay.
I understand exactly what you mean. I was writing something and I had a character suddenly make an appearance that I had not planned for, and it changed the whole dynamics of my story, but in a good way. And I just went with it. And I love how it turned out.
That actually happened with me while I was writing 6 hours, 42 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
That, a good ways into the book, and suddenly I just needed somebody, and boom, she was there. And at first, my initial idea was that, okay, I needed a minor character, and the character in question ended up being, in the latter part of the book, a major character.
Mm-hmm.
To the point she's a major character in Discreet Activities, on which I'm currently working.
Oh, fabulous.
You want to ask a question there, Lou?
Sure. Who's your favorite author, Claude, and why?
I have many favorite authors because I do read a lot, although not as much as I used to when I wasn't writing.
Uh-huh.
But I'm in no particular order. I can mention Lee Child, Michael Connelly, Robert Cray, Dennis Lehane, John Grisham, all authors who I find write well, write the kind of genres that I enjoy.
Yeah, actually, I'm with you on very many of those authors. There are my favorites as well. So, yeah, I agree with you totally. Do you want to give us an example of what your day is like as a writer from morning to night?
That depends on what I'm doing, if I'm actually actively working on a project or not. For example, I'm about 30,000 words into Discrete Activities right now, but as I was going along, I'm currently I wouldn't say that I'm at a stumbling block, but I want to think about, okay, there's a couple of directions I could go with it, and I know that the two of you have read some of my novels.
Mm-hmm.
I do try to make things as realistic as totally possible, and I want all the pieces to fit. I don't just pull the butler out of the back pantry at the last minute. Everything has to fit, and so for that to happen, sometimes you do have to step back and say, okay, where? And I've actually gone back 6 hours, 42 minutes. I'll use that book as an example again. That probably three quarters of the way through the book, I said, no, I've got a bit of a problem here. This isn't going to work. It's going to be too kind of easy, and went back to the beginning and went through and changed some things. So sometimes you just I don't consider it writer's block. I just mm-hmm. consider it creative development, if you will.
Okay.
Well, getting back to your creating the characters. For your stories, do you have more of a tendency to control their lives, or do you find that they tend to control yours after you've created them?
I think there we have a mutual agreement in the sense that I'll create them first, but then they tend to run off on their own pretty quick.
Mm-hmm.
And I do my best to keep up with them and see where they're going. And if they're going out of line, then I bring them back. But it is a team effort.
And then the character Vigilante was a very strong-minded person. And I can see in that instance where that personality would kind of take you where he wants to go. Is that truthful in saying?
Let's say with a character such as a vigilante, maybe he wasn't as much taking me where I wanted to. Well, he was in the sense that he was doing things that I legally can't and morally wouldn't. But so yes, in that sense, he was an outlet for me to show me what could be done in certain circumstances, things that I actually personally would not do. Hello? Oh, yeah, we lost him?
Yeah.
Hello?
Hello?
And hopefully this is going to work.
There we go.
Okay. Back again.
I lost you there, but...
Yeah, okay, Claude, we're back, and I really have to apologize for that. I was just kind of reprimanding Blog Talk Radio for doing this. This has happened before, but we're glad to have you back, and we'll continue with the interview. Do you remember what you were saying?
we can listen to the tape after and figure it out.
Oh, okay. Rewind in your head, would you, if you could, and take us back.
I'm just not sure exactly where we lost each other, but I was by the computer and hit the mute button to get the volume back on, and I could hear myself talking. So
okay, so I'm pretty sure it's still continuing, and I think we left talking about your characters and who controls who, and Vigilante being sort of a dominant character in your story, and how you dealt with that, whether he was more dominant or you were more submissive? And I'm sorry for the references here. It sounds very sexual, and I don't mean to do that. And yes, this is a family show, so please forgive my reference.
I didn't take it in that sense whatsoever.
Okay.
That's good.
Yeah, no, basically, as I was, I'll just recap briefly, you brought me back online on what I was saying. No, in the case of the character in Vigilante, as I was mentioning, I could say that, okay, he was taking over in the sense that he was doing things that I personally wouldn't do because they're legally wrong, maybe to a certain extent morally wrong, depending on mm-hmm. a person's point of view.
Uh-huh.
So that's it's a question that the character was expressing himself for me for things that I don't do on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
I do as you know as the writer I do have some you know some hold on the reins as to what the character will or will not do, and if they get out of bounds, will I pull them back in?
There you go. In related to the Vigilante, how did you first conceive of the story and the character, and why did you wait for so long to publish it? Because I believe that you wrote that. Way back before 1995, was it when you actually published it?
I wrote it in 1995. What sparked the idea, and not with any direct relation whatsoever, but this was at the time of the O.J. Simpson trials, and not a question of like you know was O.J. guilty, not guilty. That's not the point. It was more simply a question of. Seeing, you know, this particular case and many other cases around the planet that occur, unfortunately, too often, where mm-hmm. people, criminals, are guilty of a crime and get away with it, and that's where Vigilante was born. You know, being the guy who comes along and says, like, this is not wrong, this is not right, the justice system is not doing its job. And I'm going to go fix things where they should have been fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's in that sense that the idea of Vigilante was born from the, you know, that particular highly publicized trial.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, there's no bearing, no relation whatsoever once anybody who's read the book would agree with me.
Yeah.
Why did I not publish it before? At the time that I finished writing it, I did attempt to get agency representation. This is 15, 16 years ago, so the internet, email, et cetera, was not as, you know, as available as it is today. I did some querying, got a number of rejections, got some requests for a partial and so on and so forth, but nothing panned out. And so I just basically put it aside, but it didn't stop me in the following 2 years to write two more books, and eventually those just went to the back burner kind of thing, because I was busy with my career, with my studies, so on and so forth. And I pulled them back out a couple of years ago, having become aware that the you know self-publishing possibilities were much more available, prevalent in this day and age. And that's why I pulled out the old manuscripts, read them over, and, you know, was pleasantly surprised to see that, hey, I still think they're good. did another review, did some more editing, and decided to put them out there, see if anybody else agreed with me.
And obviously they did.
So far.
Would you like to tell us about your other books and writing projects, just a little bit? Touch on that.
Okay, follow the Chris, the Barry McCall series, as I call it, started with Vigilante, fell right into The Consultant, which was followed immediately by Mind Games, with the you know two main characters being Chris Barry and initially Lieutenant, then promoted to Captain Dave McCall. And those were the three that I'd written in the mid to late 90s. When I pulled them out a couple of years ago, After reviewing, re-editing the first three, my characters had come back to life in my mind, and I had an idea starting to form to write a fourth installment of the series, which is The Homeless Killer. And seeing as we were 15 years later, I at least scooted it up to 10 years later, and brought them into this story. And once that was done, well, shortly after, I started working on 6 hours, 42 minutes, which is another more a Chris Barry than a Barry McCall novel, because he really is the main, the center point in the story. But I came out with that one and really brought it up to real time. And Discrete Activities, which is the 6th installment of the series that I'm currently working on, is really in this day and age as well.
Very good, Claude. Hey, just to let everybody know out there, if Claude would like to stick around after the interview segment, we'd like to take some phone calls. Would you be up for that, or are you too busy?
Oh, no, sure. No problem.
Okay. And if you'd like to call in and get in the queue here, our toll-free number is 1-877-878-1436, or the regular number, which would be 1-626-213-5613. So go ahead and give us a call. We'll get you in the queue. And after our interview is done, which will probably be in another maybe 9-10 minutes, you'll be able to talk to Claude and ask him any questions or concerns. I know there might be a few of those out there. And what I'd like to ask you now, Claude, is let's see here. Give us some advice. What would you give to the other writers who may be in the early stages of writing or publishing their first book?
I guess the best advice I can give from the get-go is that your work is never perfect enough. I know that my books, I've never dealt with an outside editing or copy editing company or freelance kind of copy editor whatsoever. I do my own editing with the invaluable assistance of Joanne, and we can fine tooth comb a book till there's no tomorrow. And guess what? Once it's all said and done and it's out, we notice a mistake. Somebody points out a mistake. My dad will be reading the book, and my mother will call me to tell me your dad found this mistake. So you really have to never be so sure of yourself that your work is, this is great, because there's always some room for improvement. So be sure that your work is the best you can possibly make it to put it out there as a self-pub or to start approaching an agent or publishing houses. That is really important, because if the work is marred at the start, you're killing your chances from the get-go.
Very good. And, you know, I've got to admit here, I've been doing some deep research on you, looking into your past, and I've found some things on the internet that's both disturbing and very, very interesting. And we won't talk about the disturbing, but we will ask you about something that I heard in another interview that you did not too long ago regarding the possibility of a movie deal.
I was approached a couple of months ago by a film producer in LA. Who strangely enough, when I did eventually speak to her, because we originally corresponded by email, she found me doing some Google searches, which is just kind of scary and flattering at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And got to looking at my work. She started by looking at the first two novels, Vigilante and The Consultant. And when we did finally speak, she told me that she was extremely pleased with what she had read with the first two novels, and before going ahead with anything with that, she now wanted to read the next three in of the five that are currently out there for the Barry McCall series, because her intention being, if the other three impress me as much as the first two have, I'd like to make an offer for the rights on the whole series. And during this discussion, I just released Asylum shortly before that telephone call, and she asked me what about Asylum that you've just released? I've been seeing something about that, and I started talking to her about Asylum, and she ordered it from Barnes & Noble the same day, wanting to read that because seeing as Asylum is a standalone, and I was telling her I see this as a movie, like, easily. So she wanted to get into reading that before finishing the crime thriller series. I'm expecting that we'll be speaking probably sometime this week. She had told me
that.
Wow.
Fantastic.
Can I join you on the red carpet in Hollywood when that opens up?
I'll be selling tickets.
You will? Oh, okay. Well, then, good night, Claude. Nice for you to be on the show.
Oh, by the way, he was kidding about the disturbing part.
Oh, I was not.
He was, too.
I understand, getting to that disturbing part, I understand you hang around with a gentleman by the name of Luke Romaine. And I guess pretty much I've been hearing that you Twitter a lot. Can you tell us how that site in particular has driven the sales of your books? And recently you blogged about how to be successful on Twitter. Can you share with us some of your secrets?
Well, as far as Twitter being, Twitter as a vehicle to promote my work, I've been promoting my work, I would say almost exclusively via Twitter. And are my sales stellar? Not by any means. Could I pay off the mortgage or even pay a month mortgage from my book sales? I wouldn't think so. And I don't want to get into divulging numbers whatsoever, just to avoid the embarrassment on my part. But sales have been improving. A lot of it is a question of getting your name out there and convincing people to get that first book, and then it becomes word of mouth. But you have to keep on at it.
That's the marketing part of it that I think a lot of us writers cringe because we'd rather be writing than marketing. But that's all part of the process of getting your baby out into the world, pretty much, right? Would you agree?
If you're an indie, you have to do it, or you have to pay somebody to do it. Mm-hmm. One thing that I found with a platform such as Twitter is when you're doing it yourself, then you're actually, you're the one who's talking to the people out there. You're the one getting their comments. Mm-hmm. You're the one answering their questions, and I think that does make a difference rather than just having an account managed by someone to send out tweets about your books. And, I'll be the first to confess that, hell yeah, I do send out tweets about my book. My books, I send out tweets about my site. I'm looking to generate traffic to my site so that people eventually say, okay, well, he does have books too. Let's check him out. And it is working. It's not working as fast as I'd like, but that might be my impatience streak. But sales have definitely vastly improved over the last 6, 7, 8 months, and they continue to rise. So I don't see anything wrong with that.
I think the benchmark for that, Claude, would be when you are able to pay off a mortgage, even if it's just 1 month. That would be a good benchmark to hit. Hopefully you'll reach that benchmark. And I've read your stuff, and I'm amazed. I've been doing a lot of reviews of new authors on my blog, and I'm amazed at some of the talent that's out there and why I'm not seeing them in the top 40 of bestsellers, because they really are very, very well written and very good. It's got to be very difficult to be able to get your product out there. Getting back to Twitter, could you share some stories with us about some of the people you've met and the friendships that you've gained from using social media?
I've met literally thousands of people. In my case, I can say that, to a certain extent, the tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands. But, you know, people that they're – I blogged about this actually a few weeks ago where I was kind of differentiating between, like, you know, people that are, you know, really your core and then people that are friends that you speak to occasionally and then people that, you know, you're following, they're following you. But, I mean, you know, you never really have any interaction with them. With the number of followers that I have, I generally tend to stay on my timeline and not the general timeline because otherwise it's just ridiculous. But in 99% of the cases, people who will send me a tweet, I'll respond. Whether I know them, I don't know them. I mean, that's how you get to know people. They say hi. Well, you say hi back. And they say, how are you? I'm fine. How are you? And I've got to know a great many people like that.
Go ahead, Lou. I think that's important to engage people whether you know them well or not. I think it's really important for, you know, for the future of your writing.
Well, that's it. I see it in the way that you want to show people that the. Yes, I'm human, and it's not just the marketing machine. And you mentioned a bit earlier, Tom. You made a reference to my good buddy from Australia, Luke Romaine. Luke and I met on Twitter practically when I started, and kind of exchanged hellos and that, and. We just hit it off. He's got a twisted way of thinking that that correlates very very well with mine. And we generally get on Twitter in the morning for me and in the later evening for him. There's some days that we'll be bouncing tweets back and forth and lots of times just saying, you know, inane silly stuff, but we've developed a following and an audience. I look at my Twitter account, and I'm on 4,000 something lists. I can't even.
In fact, you've got a number here. I'm just looking at right now. It says you've sent 93,878 tweets.
Actually, by my scoreboard, I've sent 95,617.
Okay, then. So you've done a lot in the last 2 days, right?
Yeah, I blab a lot.
And you know, that's where I met the two of you, was on Twitter.
Well, that's right. And it's in that sense that you know, I met both of you on Twitter a while back. You were mentioning DJ and CK earlier that'll be on for Halloween. That, you know, I've known the two of them for the longest time. They actually did my first interview, and which was fabulous. So these are all people that that I've met through Twitter on the people who bought my books. The vast majority are people that you know, learned of me, met me on Twitter, and some of them have bought a book, some of them have bought all the books, some of them tell me they will buy the books, but I mean, you know, it's all a question of who's this guy Claude Bouchard? Well, that's what I'm trying to tell him. I'm over here.
Okay, now we get to the good stuff, and I do mean good stuff. What's with the chocolate chip cookies?
What's with the chocolate chip cookies? Well, Tom, I have to tell you, since you have read Vigilante, and I know you have, if I answered that question, you know what I'd have to do?
Kill you.
Kill my mailman.
No, as far, and that's funny because it really is a question that, you know, many people have asked me, and many people have told me, like, you should write a book about how to build a Twitter account, and... It's really not that complicated. You engage with people, you follow people back that follow you. You follow some people that they follow you back. Sometimes the connection doesn't work. Well, then, you know, no hard feelings, and you go on, But it's like it's a question of being active and present and sociable. It is social media, and you just grow it from there. I've done it. Luke Romaine has done it. Bill Zucker. There are hundreds of people who have used social media and built their following for whatever purposes they deemed fit, and it's very doable if you want to do it.
Right, and we got a few minutes left here. If you'd like to give Claude a call, you can call in on the regular number 1-626-213-5613 or call toll free at 1-877-878-1436. And there was something that I had, but I kind of flew out of my mind here. Lou, do you got any more questions for Mr. Bouchard?
Mr. Bouchard?
Bouchard?
let's have a look here. I wanted to ask you a little bit about your art, Claude. You're an artist. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
The art started a number of years ago where my wife at the time, I've always been one who doesn't really sit idle, and she had come home from work one day. She had been shopping over lunch hour and had bought me a paint by number thing to, here, this will keep you busy for a couple of hours. That was my first, my first real exposure to, like, doing any painting. And as soon as I was finished that, after a couple of hours, I went out to the art store and bought a canvas and a few basic colors and a couple of brushes and linseed oil and got to work and started doing something of my own creation. Mm-hmm. And from there, I've painted probably close to 100 oils over the years. When I met Joanne is the assistant director of an art school here in Montreal. Mm-hmm. And so obviously she's into and involved in the arts. And when I met her, she had suggested at one point that you might want to try a different medium just for fun and, change your style, loosen up a bit on some things, and introduce me to watercolor.
Watercolor.
Doing now for about 5 years or so, and which is a completely different technique, but also mm-hmm. also a lot of fun. Well, actually, two of my books, Mind Games and then Asylum, the covers are watercolors that I did.
Fabulous.
Very good. Well, Claude, it's kind of wrapping things up here. Anything else that you would like to share with us and our listeners? And where can our listeners reach you in your books?
Well, our listeners can meet me basically all day till about 5 o'clock Eastern time. I'm usually on the computer and the Twitter window's open, so they can reach me there. That's CEEBEE308, CB308. And otherwise, if they don't want to bother messing with me, they just want to go to my website, that's even easier. It's ClaudeBouchardBooks.com.
Very good. And, sir, it's been a pleasure to meet you in the past, and it's even a greater pleasure to talk to you, and it's even a greater pleasure to read your books, and I do intend to read more of them. And I encourage anyone out there, if you would like to read Claude's books, go to his website or go to your Kindle and take a look and see if you can find him on there. And I know you can. His books are on there. So thank you so much, sir, and we will talk to you again. Like to have you on again, if you wouldn't mind. And I wanted to mention also that your buddy will be on October 17th, so you might want to listen in on that date so you can give a call in and talk to Luke.
Oh, I don't think anybody would want to hear Luke and I talking, actually.
I think we would.
I think it would be fun to hear you two banter back and forth.
Well, actually, Luke and I have done a couple of interviews where we're both on at the same time,
mm-hmm.
and it's been interesting.
Thank you so much, sir.
Thank
we
you.
We appreciate it.
Good to talk to you, Claude.
Good to talk to you. Thank
Say
you very much.
Say hi to Joanne.
Bye-bye.
Joanne,
bye.
Hello. Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, Lou, there it goes. And with about, about 5 minutes left in the program, we're going to have to tie things up rather quickly here. We normally have a segment where we touch on some of the opening topics that we talked about, but with 5 minutes left, I think what I'm going to do is talk a little bit about our next author on the Writer's Lounge. Her name is Sherry Gambino from Kansas City, Missouri. She's a part-time horror writer who has written several short stories, including a collection of 12 stories in a book I have reviewed on Amazon.com. I'll soon be posting a review of that same book on the Writer's Lounge blog within the next couple of days. The name of that book is Twisted Tales of Terror. So tune in to the broadcast on September 19th when we welcome Sherry Gambino to the show. Any parting words, Lou?
Just to say it was great talking to Claude again. He's a great guy. He and Luke, as much as he says he doesn't think it's a good thing to have both of them on at the same time, I think it would be fabulous. When I first joined Twitter, I was absolutely fascinated by these little sayings that they came up with because they're so quick. They're like this, one after the other.
They are.
And it's do yourselves a favor, look him up on Twitter. Look up Luke Romain, that's spelled R-O-M-Y-N, as Tom said. We're going to have him on a future show as well. And have a look at what these guys tweet about. It's pretty fascinating.
And once again, if you'd like to reach us, twl11@yahoo.com. Send us an email. We'd love to hear from you. Any comments or questions, or if you are an author and would like to be on the program, we'd love to hear from you. So until next time, good reading and good writing.
Good night.
It's dark as night. Middle of the day, your faith and your fences have been blown away. You're down in the cellar and you've locked yourself in. Ah, but it looks like it's rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Morn. He said, Noah, get ready, for the sky will be torn. Build as I tell you, save what you can. Then wait while the rainbow weather begins. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. Storm clouds apart and the sun will peek in. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind. And it looks like it's rainbow weather again. Trouble will come, but trouble will go. You're living in fear, but what do you know? You know that the sun's always coming then. You know there'll be rainbow weather again. It looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and some pecan. The rain will roll out on a westerly wind, and it looks like it's rainbow weather. Yeah, it looks like it's rainbow weather again. The storm clouds apart and the sun peeking.